Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today, our guest on the show is Mr. Eric Thomas, who's the director of Morehead State University's Star Theater. And got a lot to talk about today, Eric. Thanks so much for coming over and joining us.
It was my pleasure. Happy to be here.
We're going to talk about something special that's happening right now. And there is actually a comet that will be visible for people to look at, I guess with the naked eye, correct?
We're hoping that, yeah. Comet Ison was discovered back in 2012 using a series of automated telescopes, and that's where it gets its name from. It is predicted to pass just within about 750,000 miles of the sun on Thanksgiving Day. And each morning as we get closer to Thanksgiving, it's going to get a little bit brighter in the morning sky. And then if it survives that pass around the sun, it should be an even brighter object. There's a chance that it could break up as it passes around the sun, because that is a really close pass, and the sun's gravity could pull it apart. But in the past, that's also led to some really spectacular post-perihelion comets as well.
How special is this for this to happen?
Well, we don't see comets all the time. Last year, there was a real faint comet. It was hard to see. It was low in the evening sky, and it just wasn't very bright. There are a lot of comet bodies out there, but they don't always produce a tail. And right now, Ison is producing a little bit of a tail. You'd have to have a telescope to find it right now. This one has, again, the potential to be a bright one. It was, when it was discovered, it was about two magnitudes brighter than it should have been at the distance from the sun it was. So that's why the astronomers were giving it a little hope that this might be a really bright comet.
I think we should probably backtrack a little bit, explain exactly what a comet is.
Well, comets are really dirty snowballs out in space. They're made up of astronomers refer to as volatiles, frozen volatiles, which are gases that are in a frozen state, and then pieces of dust and rock. And so you can think of it as a big dirty snowball, and as it gets in closer to the sun, usually within inside the orbit of Jupiter, about 4.5 times farther from the sun than the Earth is, that frozen gas starts to turn directly into a gas through a process we call sublimation. It doesn't go through a liquid stage. And that's where the tail starts to form. So you get these little jets of gas and rock and dust that come off that reflect sunlight, and they trail out behind the comet as it approaches the sun. Now, one thing most folks may not realize is that a comet's tail always points away from the sun. So when Ison comes in, of course, here in the morning hours, you're going to have to see it before sunrise. Its tail is going to be pointing away from the sun. And then when it swings around the sun on Thanksgiving Day and starts back out, its tail will lead it back away as it goes out into the solar system.
Yeah, when I think about a comet, oftentimes I think a fireball, but I guess it's anything but.
Yeah, really. Comets are pretty dynamic objects just from the fact that as these ices turn into gases, the comet changes. And there were some movies in the past, Armageddon and... there was another one I can't think of that had Morgan Freeman in it that both dealt with comets that were going to crash into the Earth. And the Armageddon one was not realistic very well as far as the science go, but the other movie was not too badly done as far as the science went.
Does that kind of wreck the movie, though, because you know almost all this kind of stuff? I mean, for the average layperson out there like me, I can watch this thing, and because I don't know very much about it, and I'll get more enjoyment out of it. It's kind of like for me, I watch a baseball movie, and I pick it apart. Because I love baseball and have studied the game my whole life, and so I'm looking for things that are wrong about it. Do you do the same thing maybe with comets and movies like that?
I see it. I try to suspend my disbelief, you know, enough to where I can enjoy the movie. The only thing the one movie got wrong, the one that I liked the better of the two, the one with Morgan Freeman was the comet was. the tail was pointed in the wrong direction when it hit the Earth. And because it was coming away from the sun, so the tail should have struck the Earth first, and they got that part wrong. But if they'd have done that in Hollywood, people would have thought, oh, they got that all wrong because, you know, the tail has to follow the comet. But no, comets' tails always point away from the sun.
Interesting. How big are comets generally? Is there kind of a rule of thumb on that?
Well, Ison's thought to be about 3 miles in diameter, the core of Ison, or what astronomers call the nucleus. And when it starts to warm up and starts to sublimate, it'll produce a gaseous atmosphere around it that's called the coma, and that'll be several hundred miles in diameter. And then as it gets even closer, the solar wind will start to stream that coma away, and that's where the tails form. And comets can have two tails. They can have what's called a dust tail and an ion tail. And the ion tail are charged particles, and they'll stream directly away from the sun. So they point like an arrow directly away from the sun. And the dust tail will actually sometimes curve away, and so you'll get a little bit of a sweeping arcing tail. And so you can actually see two tails on one comet.
That's kind of interesting. I really didn't know that. So you can't see both of them, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Usually the ion tail will have a color to it, and then the dust tail will be just brighter white. Back in the 90s, there was a comet called Hayakutake, I believe is the name. It was named after a gentleman in Japan who discovered it with a pair of binoculars. And it was mainly just producing an ion tail, and it was kind of a bluish tail that just swung straight back. But then you've had comets like Halley's comet. It produces a copious dust tail behind it, and you get that nice sweeping fan-shaped tail behind it as well.
Are there a lot of comets out there?
There are. I think at last count, when I looked, there were well over 5,000 known comets. And comets are divided into two categories. You have short-period comets. Those are comets whose orbits are less than 200 years for them to make an orbit. And then you have long-period comets, and those are any that are over 200 years. What's unique about Ison is it's coming in on a trajectory that may indicate that it's what's called a hyperbolic comet. It may sweep around the sun, and it may be ejected out of the solar system. And there's a chance that this one might actually come from a region called the Oort cloud. That's about a light year out. It's a zone around our solar system where we think there are a lot of comet bodies out there. So this may be a really fresh comet that's never made a pass through the inner solar system before, and we may get to see some interesting things from the gases that it produces by looking at it with various instruments.
You said that Ison could actually break up as it goes around the sun, right?
It could, yeah. I mean, it's going to pass within 720 1,000 miles of the sun. That's really close. And so the gravitational stresses on it may actually cause it to break up into a lot of pieces. And we saw this several years ago. If you remember, Shoemaker-Levy 9 passed too close to Jupiter and broke up. And then you had this string of comets that swung back around and crashed into Jupiter one piece at a time. Well, if Ison does this because it's passing around the sun, what we may get is a really bright kind of a dust cloudy effect on the other side as it comes out from behind the sun.
Do comets have a certain lifespan?
They do. Some comets, after they make enough passes around the sun, they'll have used up all that volatile material, those frozen gases, and all that's left is really the dusty, rocky material, and they become inactive. And there are comets like that. If you go out onto NASA web pages and search for some comet pictures like Borelli, you can see the nucleus of a comet without any outgassing, without any tail. And they just look like, they almost look like asteroids in a similar type fashion. But it's just that getting close to the sun and those gases, frozen gases, turning into gas that makes them the comets that we see.
If I look up at the sky, mm-hmm. how will I be able to tell if I'm seeing ice or not. You know, a lot of things go passing through the sky each and every night, but how will I be able to tell, oh boy, that's a comet?
Well, with icing, if it does form a nice tail, it's not going to be a fast-moving object. It's going to appear to be stationary with, like, two little fingers pointing back away from the sun, or one or two fingers. That'll be the tails. You'll have to see it in the morning before sunrise. You'll need to be looking towards the east and a little bit towards the south. If you know something about the sky and where to find some of the constellations, Icen is going to be the near the star Spica in Virgo on the 18th of November. And as it gets closer and closer to the sun, it's going to move a little faster and faster each night as it gets in. As it moves in towards its rendezvous with the sun.
I'm just going to have to look to the southeast. I'm just going to have to tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be start about 5:30, 6 in the morning, and it should get naked eye visible probably sometime in after about the 15th or so. You should be able to see it with the naked eye or binoculars.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's neat stuff. You know, comets are some of the oldest objects in our solar system. They're the remnants from when our solar system formed, and astronomers really are interested in them. We've had two spacecraft. The U.S. has had two spacecraft specifically on comet missions. One, Stardust, flew through the tail of a comet, and it used a collector plate with a material called aerogel, which is kind of like puffed glass that it opened up while it was in the tail and collected comet particles. They impacted and sealed themselves into the glass, and then the spacecraft came back by the Earth and dropped the probe off with the sample disk, and that's now at the Johnson Space Center, I believe, those particles are being studied. And then Deep Impact flew out and actually launched a 650-kilogram copper projectile into a comet to blow a clean hole in the surface of the comet so we could see some fresh material from the interior of that. And so comets are prime candidates for study for astronomers. They tell us a lot about the origin of our solar system.
I was going to say, they could probably tell you a lot about the beginning of time, in essence, mm-hmm. in many ways.
Yeah, yeah. And in ancient times, you know, comets were predictors of doom. You have the Battle of Hastings in 1066. There was a bright comet in the sky, and King Henry, the English king, was defeated. And so that was said to have predicted his doom. If you look at the Bayeux Tapestry, that's actually depicted on that tapestry. And in Shakespeare, in the play Julius Caesar, his wife Calpurnia talks about having bad dreams and how she sees Caesar being assassinated, and Caesar kind of dismisses that, and she says something to the effect that comets only appear in the sky for the demise of kings, not for common men. And so there were, you know, for a long time, comets were thought to be, if you saw a comet in the sky, something bad was going to happen.
So what you're saying is that we should be able to see a comet before every Chicago Cubs opening day.
I can't say that. I can't say that.
This is pretty special, though, isn't it? The opportunity to see something like this.
It is. I was fortunate enough to see Comet Halley on its last pass. I'll have to be in my 90s to see it again. Which maybe with modern medicine, I may make it to that. They do occur every few years. We seem to get a comet that comes through, but to see a really bright one is a rare event. And this, there's a famous quote by David Levy. He's a famous comet hunter, and he says that comets are like cats. They have tails and they do what they want. Icen may fizzle. We may see nothing. But most of the predictions, if you read astronomy magazines, Sky and Tell, or check a lot of the websites, a lot of folks are thinking Icen may put on a decent show.
So, and that will again be around Thanksgiving or so, into December? Or?
Should be able to see it pre-Thanksgiving in the morning sky. And then after it swings around the sun, if it survives that, you'll also be able to see it in the morning sky after Thanksgiving, December 1st, up through about mid-December. And it may be as the sun sets, if you've got a low western horizon, you may be able to catch it, because when it swings around the sun, it's going to be on the opposite side of the sun and sort of on the in that western sky. And so you may see it in the evening as well.
Again, our guest today on the front page is Eric Thomas, the director of Morehead State University's Star Theater. We are going to break here on the show, come back with more right after this.
Mountain Edition is Morehead State Public Radio's most comprehensive local news program. Every weekday afternoon at 4:30, this half-hour magazine presents our longest news and sportscasts, features, and commentary on the news. It's a show that brings you closer to politics, education, the environment, and the arts in the part of the country where you live. That's Mountain Edition, weekday afternoons at 4:30 on Morehead State Public Radio.
Welcome back to today's front page. I'm Chuck Meraz, the director of Morehead State University's Star Theater. Eric Thomas is joining us today on the program. And as we continue our discussion, Eric, I know that the holiday season is always a big one for the Star Theater. I know there's a lot going on generally throughout the year, but the holiday season, I guess you'd kind of ratchet it up a little bit, and it's a little bit more special.
Well, it is. We do some special shows themed around that time of the year. We've got a planetarium program called Season of Light. It looks at where a lot of our holiday traditions come from, everything from why we hang mistletoe and kiss under the mistletoe to lighting Christmas trees.
Well, for me, in high school, it was about the only shot I had to ever get kissed by a girl. So,
yeah, I can agree with you on that one too. But this show, it covers a lot of where our traditions come from. It starts with the Roman holiday of Saturnalia and works all the way up through our modern Christmas traditions. And there's even a little sky talk that's built into the show, shows you where to find some of the winter constellations and what we could expect to see in the night sky. And then we follow that with a laser show called Laser Holidays. And this is Christmas music, Christmas songs with laser-generated imagery on the dome. And there's a wide variety of artists involved in that one.
I'm hoping Mannheim Steamroller is a part of this.
I believe there's one of their songs in there. Carol of the Bells, I think, is there. You've got Nat King Cole. You've got, would you believe the Smashing Pumpkins did
really?
A Christmas song? Annie Lennox. So there's a wide variety. So if you're looking for, if you can, Peggy Lee. Oh, I'm drawing a blank right now, and that's a shame. But there's several artists, and it goes from the modern to the classical Christmas songs. And so this is a time when we run out some extra shows. We'll actually start the first week of December on the 6th, that Friday evening, with Season of Light at 7 and Laser Holidays at 8. And then on Saturday, we'll do a 2 o'clock Season of Light and Laser Holidays at 3, and then come back at 7 and 8 and do that again. Back on Friday the 13th for the evening show. Saturday the 14th, we'll have afternoon and evening shows. And then running up to that last weekend, we'll have shows on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, the 19th, 20th, and Saturday the 21st. So these are all on our webpage, the morehedstate.edu/StarTheater under public shows. And there's you don't need to reserve tickets or anything like that. Just come and enjoy the Christmas season with us.
But if you, and I'm going to say this right now, and I have had this opportunity, but for those people who've not had the chance to see one of these laser shows that is accompanied with music, I mean, it's out of this world, literally. And I mean, I that was the best term I could think of, but it's really something cool.
I had someone tell me once that it was, he now knows what it was. After seeing a laser show, he said, I understand what it'd be like to live in a kaleidoscope. And but, you know, this one, the Christmas show, the imagery is more is less abstract imagery, and it's more themed to go along with the song. So if you've got Bing Crosby singing White Christmas, it's the imagery of what you would expect from a White Christmas as opposed to the Smashing Pumpkins song. It's a little different, but it is really neat.
Do you guys design these shows, or do you get them from an outside source? Or?
These shows actually come from the company, the vendor that produced the hardware. So the shows that we have all come from them, the shows they've produced.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I know that other places do similar things. I didn't know if you guys made this up on your own. But it'd be impressive either way.
It's labor intensive. The last facility I worked at, we gave it a shot, and the student assistant we had that was really good with the laser system spent a 40-hour week and produced 5 minutes of animation. And, you know, it's a tough thing to do. It's because you're really drawing like a cartoon frame by frame at 30 frames a second. And so it's a tough thing to do on an individual basis like that.
Wow, yeah, I can't even imagine how the professionals do this and are able to keep it, I guess, I don't want to say it's always going to be work intensive, but less work intensive, so you're able to crank out a number of shows.
Yeah.
How long are the shows generally?
Season of Light, that show runs about 35 minutes, I believe, and Laser Holidays is in the 40 to 45 minute range. So if you came for both shows, you know, you could expect to spend an hour and a half. There's a short intermission between the two. And the pricing's really good for them. Season of Light, it's $1 for students and senior citizens and $2 for adults. And the Laser Holidays is $4 for students and senior citizens and $5 for adults. And MSU, of course, MSU students, faculty, staff, just show your ID, and that's all you need to get in.
Yeah, it's, as I said, it's really, really neat. And the one thing about it is the atmosphere inside the Star Theater. I mean, sometimes you almost forget where you are when you're watching this, and that's what is almost one of the neatest things about the experience.
Yeah, it's the seats are really comfortable. You know, they recline back. Everything takes place on the dome over your head, and we try to keep a nice ambient temperature in there and just try to make it as relaxing and enjoyable atmosphere as we can.
Well, you do shows all year round. Besides
we
the
do.
Holiday shows, I know you do a lot of stuff all year round.
We do. We have a large group of school groups that come through and see our programs because we do have a lot of educational programs. About 60% of our attendance is from public school groups. About 30% is from MSU classes and other MSU groups. And then about 10% is the general public when they come to the shows when we're on open on the weekends.
Do you hope that somewhere deep inside you, when you bring in these school kids, that they'll watch some of these shows and all of a sudden it just kind of maybe flips a switch for them regarding astronomy and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's what did it for me. I grew up in eastern Kentucky, in just outside of Pikeville, and my only exposure to planetariums was in the summer when I went with my parents to visit my relatives in Pittsburgh, and we would go to the Buell Planetarium, and I was always fascinated and amazed, and that led to a small telescope at one point while I was growing up, and it led to going into earth science teaching and working with Dr. Malfres here as his grad assistant and helping do the observing sessions for his undergraduate classes. And so I could say that, yes, I think I hope it does spark a student. I hope it sparks a lot of students. But I know for a fact it sparked me, and just that exposure did.
Again, the first holiday show is when?
Friday, December 6th, 7 o'clock, Season of Light, and Laser Holidays at 8 p.m.
And again, you can check out all the information about all the shows on the Morehead State University website, which is moreheadstate.edu, and then /Star Theater. Eric, thanks so much for being with us today on the Front Page. Always great to have you over.
Pleasure, Chuck. Anytime.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Eric Thomas, director of Morehead State University's Star Theater. I'm Chuck Meraz, host of Front Page. See you next time.